And we'll go ahead and get started. So hello, everybody. Welcome to our monthly Citizen Review Committee meeting. We typically start our meetings by having introductions, but we're going to do something a little bit differently this time. I'm going to ask the panelists to please introduce themselves, and I'll call on you. In the meantime, I would like all the participants that are here joining us, members of the audience, use the chat function to write your name, your affiliation, and part of Portland that you live in, and then I will go through and read everything out so that it is officially on the record. But just after last time, I think this will be a more efficient way to get through who's in the room. I do still think it's important to know who's here, but we're not gonna ask everybody to tell us on camera, okay? So I'll start. I'm Candace Avalo, she, her pronouns. I'm the acting chair, and I am in Northeast Portland. And let's go, I'm just gonna see in the order I see you. So Adam, next.
Adam Green, CRC member, he, him pronouns. I live in Southeast Portland in Woodstock.
Christopher. You're muted.
First fail today. I'm Chris Jovic, acting captain of internal affairs.
Thank you. Julie.
Hi, I'm Julie Falk. I'm a CRC member from Southwest Portland, she, her.
Sylvan.
Hi, Sylvan Frazier. They, them pronouns. I'm a CRC member and I live in Southeast Portland.
Taylor.
Taylor Snell, he, him pronouns, and I live in Southeast in Selwood.
Vadim.
Vadim Mazursky, a CRC member, and I live in Southwest Portland.
Chief Lavelle.
I'm Chuck Lavelle, Chief Portland Police, he, him, his pronouns.
Jihan.
Hi everyone, Jihan Nami, she, her, hers, Southeast Portland, CRC member.
Irene.
Hi, Irene Konev, she, her pronouns, and I'm a community outreach coordinator for the Independent Police Review, and I'm joining you from Danby.
Ross.
Ross Caldwell, he, him, from IPR, and I live in Southwest Portland.
Dana.
Hi, Dana McCauley with IPR. I use she or they pronouns, and
and you're the...
I'm the deputy director of IPR.
Thank you.
Yes.
And then David.
I'm David Nguyen, he, him, I'm IPR staff.
Great. So I'm going to read into the record folks that are joining us, and I apologize in advance if I do not pronounce your name properly. Please send me a chat and scold me if I do not, and I will try and fix it for next time. So we have in attendance Barbara Christensen. Whoops, nope. I'm gonna get to you next. Okay, this is gonna work. I'm gonna make this work. Jonas Geisler, DOJ monitoring for the settlement agreement in Northeast Portland. We've got Melon Colwell, North Portland, interested citizen. Leah Peace, OTCT, which I'm not sure what that stands for. If you'd like to share in the chat, please do. Jim Cahan, Eastmoreland, applying to serve on CRC. Barbara Christensen, Beckman Neighborhood Community Association member, Inner Southeast. Layla Haju, Islamic Social Services of Oregon State and Muslim Advisory Council with PPV. Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch and Flying Focus Video Collective. On the phone, but also on the computer. Those only on the phone can't use the chat function. That is true. If you are on the phone and you'd like to introduce yourself because you cannot use the chat, why don't you go ahead and raise your hand and I'll call on you. Lindsay Hessel, no affiliation, Southwest Portland. Carol Cushman, League of Women Voters of Portland, live in North Portland. Leah Farr, Southeast Portland. Jessica, no affiliation, in Beaverton. Max Lieberman, no affiliation, he, him, Northeast Portland, Piedmont. Alec Condon, he, him, Southeast Gladstone, CRC workgroup participant. Josh Blunt, no affiliation, Northwest Portland, he, him. Old Town Chinatown. That was where Leah Peace is from. Debbie Iona, League of Women Voters of Portland. Okay, I think that worked. Do we have any people that are, David, if you can help me check, that are trying to introduce themselves and cannot?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Please do, for people that were joining on late, what I asked is that you share your name, affiliation, and where you live in Portland in the chat so that I could read it out loud for the record. And Jared Hager, Northeast Portland, the U.S. Attorney's Office, monitoring the settlement agreement for the DOJ. All right, well, we are going to go ahead and move on. So we do not have an appeal today, but we do have Portland Police Chief Lavelle here, and that's going to be one of the first things we do. I will note that we're not going to do a vote on our June 3rd minutes. David's going to send those out to us, and we'll postpone it to the next meeting. Okay, so thank you again for being here, Police Chief Lavelle. We brought you here, one, to just meet you and let you meet us. And of course, ask you a couple of questions. I know CRC members might have some questions, and also give you an opportunity to talk about what you think your relationship with the CRC can be moving forward as a new chief. So I will start by just having you introduce yourself to us. Thank you, Chief.
Sure, thanks, Candace. So my name is Chuck Lavelle. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. I've been in Portland since 2001, and I've been with the Police Bureau since 2002. I've had a varying assignments, everything from patrol to school police to the detective division, personnel division, behavioral health unit, chief's office. I was the adjutant for Chief Outlaw for almost 2 years while she was here. And then prior to being promoted to chief, I was running our community services division. It was a surprise to take over about 3 weeks ago as chief. As you all know, it's kind of a challenging time in law enforcement and in the community in general. So I'm really looking forward to an opportunity to work with community partners internally and external from the Bureau to try to figure out ways to really reconnect the Police Bureau and the community. We're still going through the pandemic and dealing with that at the Police Bureau. And also we took a significant budget cut last week as well too. So we're trying to figure out what that means for us as far as resources and personnel distribution and things of that nature. But I'm really looking forward to an opportunity to kind of maybe rethink some of the things we have going as far as training and patrol and just figure out ways to really regain kind of the relationship that we once had with the community and kind of rebuild the trust from there.
Great. Thank you so much. I wanted to open it up to CRC members if we wanted to ask some questions, and I'll open it up. I have a couple. I'll wait and see who else has some first.
I have a question. Chief Lavelle, thanks for being here. I know you're entering this job at a very interesting moment. But I'm curious what your initial assessment is of PPB's response to ongoing demonstrations.
Well, I mean, we have thousands of peaceful protesters that take to the streets, every night, and they kind of are pushing a real message of change, and we're hearing that message. I think the unfortunate part is that we have a few hundred that come downtown or to various precincts at night and are really more violent, throwing things and kind of engaging in confrontational behaviors with officers, trying to light fires and things of that nature. So I just want to be able to use whatever tools we have at our disposal and our limited, human resources of people to try to protect life and property downtown. And I think as long as we have that activity continuing, a lot of my focus is going towards that. I'd really like to be able to pay more attention to the other folks who are trying to message change and kind of get some time to figure out what you know, what they're hoping for and what that might look like in the future. But in the meantime, it's literally keeping my buildings from burning down and keeping my folks from getting hurt and that kind of stuff.
Go ahead, Vadim.
Hi, Chief LaVille. I want to follow up on what you made earlier about community engagement and thinking about how that can be improved between the police bureau and the various communities that are in Portland. I've attended a lot of meetings, as you know, about community engagement, and we kind of ask the same question. People ask for it and say that there needs to be more of it, but when it comes down to the details of what they expect, everybody kind of has a blank stare. You have really deep roots in the community, and I think that's one of the reasons why they elevated you to the chief job. Any thoughts right now about what you'd like to see in the future, putting in a hot seat perhaps here, but that is not being done right now?
You know, for me, I remember a time when I first started where, you know, kind of district officer, we call it like, you know, districts or, you know, sections of town that you police. And I remember a time when district officers really had connections to their district and the people in their district. And there was more of a relationship. Like, you would drive down the street and you would know the people you would see walking around. You'd stop and have conversations. They would know you and have conversations with you. And there wasn't that, you know, kind of disconnect where you look at them, they look at you, and you wonder about them, they wonder about you. I want to get back to that where officers are really invested in a community and, you know, have a lot of ownership and accountability to that community, and vice versa. I think people want good policing in their neighborhoods. They want relationships with officers they trust and know. And I think getting back to that is going to help us kind of going forward.
Hi. Oh, go ahead, Julie.
I'm Julie Falk. Thanks so much for coming, Chief LaVille. It's nice to have you. I was just wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about your own background and how you came to policing as a profession.
Wow, I have to think back. I can say I probably wanted to be a police officer since like elementary school. I was a paper boy when I was young. I was probably 12 or 13. And I remember, like, you have to go collect money every month for the newspaper. So at 12 or 13, I would have to go to, I had about 50 or 60 people on my paper route. And I'd have to go to their house every month, knock on their door, and, you know, get payment for the paper. And I would have these distinct relationships with my neighbors, like adult neighbors. And I remember, you know, feeling a sense of responsibility to get the paper to them on time and collect the money. And I'd go to their houses, and it would range from everyone to the person who, like, cracked the door open an inch and slid the check out and then slammed it shut, to people you'd ring the doorbell and they'd be like, hey, come on in, we're just about to eat dinner. We've got an extra place set for you. And you'd sit there and eat dinner with them. And that really ingrained me in my neighborhood, and knowing the people and having relationships with them. There were probably half the neighborhood I had keys to their house, and I would collect their mail and water their plants while they were gone. And I remember that fabric of, you know, having a community and that sense of connection. And I've always really liked that. And I think that's what kind of has helped me throughout my career, to have relationships with people and things of that nature. I joined the Air Force when I was 19, left New York and kind of went to Virginia, lived in a few different places, traveled overseas quite a bit. And then I ended up for a time thinking I would stay doing the stuff I did in the military. And then I had a girlfriend who lived in Portland, and I was like, maybe I'll go to Portland and apply with the police bureau. And that's kind of what happened in 2001. And I've been here ever since. But my whole life, since probably the age of 12 or 13, I've been in service to either my community, my country, to the city of Portland. So, I mean, it's just kind of in my blood, kind of what my parents instilled in me too.
Thanks for sharing.
Sure.
I think, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I think for us, our role on the CRC is to, obviously we have an appeals process for police misconduct cases, but we're also here to represent the voice of the community. And, you know, I hear you saying that that community relationship is important, you're wanting to return to that. And I listened to your statement that you put out on the protests, and I think for me, the way I see it, especially, I know there's a lot of tension right now. And, you know, last night, frankly, I was appalled seeing a journalist being attacked by the police. I mean, that's just the way I personally see it. And I feel like there needs to be a point where that perspective of the community is taken into account as well. And I'm speaking for myself, but I'll say that I think on the CRC, it's our job to offer that perspective and make sure that that's a part of the conversation. So I'm curious what you think, how you think the community sees you now and how you think they feel in response to the protests. I want to see if you're like, what your perspective would be from the lens of being a community member, just to get a better understanding of your interpretation of what they're feeling.
You know, I think there's two distinct kind of looks at this. You know, I think there's a lot of peaceful protesters that are out there engaged in just free speech. And we're out there to protect free speech. We honor and value free speech. It's unfortunate that sometimes there's a small and very small handful of people that engage in, you know, literally throwing rocks, projectiles, explosives, you know, commercial grade fireworks at officers and things of that nature, setting fires. And, you know, I said today, it's like, we don't want to be out there using munitions or CS gas and things like that against community members. That's not what we want. We're put in that position when we have to defend life and property and when people won't obey lawful orders. And it's a tough position. I don't think police were ever really designed to be face-to-face with community members on a riot line. You know, ideally, when I signed up, I wanted to be side-by-side with community members, helping make community safer and better. I mean, that's why you raise your hand and take this job. So, I mean, the crowd control aspect of this is very difficult. But we have, at some point, to protect life and property, too. So, I mean, I wish, it is my hope that at some point, the violent, like late night protesters that come to precincts and downtown to throw things and do that stuff subsides, and we can really get down to figuring out what the community wants to see from their police and what they feel like the future might look like, and have those conversations. To me, that's what I'm looking for.
Want to open it up for more questions? I've got more, but I'm trying to hold back. I could talk all night. Go ahead, Taylor.
Yeah, I have one. Hi, Chief Lavelle. I was just curious.
Hey,
there's been a few proposals and ideas floating around about what the role of future oversight for police misconduct could be in Portland. And I think Commissioner Hardesty has had an idea for an entirely new review body. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, or what the future of citizen oversight could look like for police misconduct.
Yeah, you know, I haven't had much time to delve into that. I've actually seen a little bit of Commissioner Hardesty's proposal. I think for the little bit I know about it is vastly different than the system we have currently. But I would say this, we've had civilian oversight here in Portland for a while. I mean, we are, as far as cities go, we're pretty progressive. I mean, we've been doing this type of work with community and community oversight and groups like PSEP and COAB before that, and with the DOJ for 7+ years. So we've been doing work to improve. We've been looking at our policies, our training. And, you know, I think we've always been pretty agile and nimble as far as changes we've had to make over the last 7 years. So I don't know what'll happen essentially with her proposal for oversight, but I mean, oversight from the community is something that we've had here in Portland. We've gotten used to and embraced on some level. So we're not like some other departments that are, you know, they're staunchly against oversight, or they're, you know, not willing to change or make reforms.
So, you know, as the new chief, I think for us, and we've got a bunch of new members here as well, We're trying to figure out what that relationship looks like, and also when we make decisions or recommendations, how those are going to be supported by the police and enacted. So what do you think that looks like? And, you know, is there somebody in your department that you think could be a liaison to the CRC, or who can actually implement what we're asking? Because I think sometimes we've hit a wall where we'll say this, this, and that, and then it's crickets, and then it feels very frustrating for us because we're doing our best to translate the community's demands into tangible actions. So what do you think that relationship could look like, and who could be that bridge for us?
I don't know of a person who can be the bridge right now. It's probably something I'd have to give some thought to, but I look to work collaboratively. I always stumble on that word, collaboratively, with CRC. And I tell people all the time, I'm one person, and I don't have all the answers. I am very much kind of an interactive person. I like to hear from people, hear what they think, entertain other ideas that aren't maybe necessarily in line with some of the, you know, traditional norms of policing, and just see what makes sense, what works for people, what could be better than it is today. So I look forward to a good relationship with CRC. I know in the past, sometimes people have been like, well, you know, I don't, making those changes are hard, or there's this reason or that reason. But I think right now is a time where change is upon us in this profession. So I think it's really a time to really look at what changes make sense, given the, you know, budgetary and the, you know, just social landscape in this country and in the city right now. You know, what kind of things could be different? What kind of things could be better?
Do other CRC members have questions?
I have a question. Hi, Chief. Hey. You've mentioned a couple of times wanting to hear from the community, what their needs are, and wanting to hear from the CRC as well. And I know that you're very new in your role yet, but I'm wondering if you have thoughts about how you would want to establish that dialogue, because we have all of those protests happening. Obviously, demands are being met, made in the streets. A lot of community organizations have already made demands for several years now. How do you anticipate being able to engage in the dialogue with the various stakeholders who are making these demands?
That's a good question. I think there's some different ways to do it. You know, traditionally we've had advisory councils, we've had some internal kind of connections to community. And those are sometimes based on, you know, demographic groups or like very job specific type things, like our training advisory council or budget advisory council. And then through meetings that we have, you know, on a recurring basis, like PSEP and other groups like that, IPAC, Interface Peace Action Collaborative. We do hear from community, but I really want to hear from folks too who we normally don't hear from. I kind of see a lot of the same people in a lot of the same meetings, but there's, you know, 650,000 people that live in the city of Portland, many of whom aren't necessarily actively engaged in political or, you know, maybe social conversation around issues. But I'd like to really hear from some of them what they think about, you know, policing, what they think about, you know, police accountability. Do they have no opinion? Do they think it needs, you know, huge reform? Do they think it needs little tweaks? I'd like to really try to broaden some way that voice that we hear. I don't know all the answers, like how to do it, but I think, you know, there's, I like the fact of just going out having listening sessions or kind of dialogue circles or things of that nature. When Chief Outlaw was here, we did some barbershop and salon forums, different places to hear some different voices. So I really like to be out in the community having these conversations. With the pandemic, that makes it very difficult. But I'm definitely open to hear, because I think it behooves us as a community to hear all the different voices and come up with some solutions that are gonna be long-term, one, and sustainable, but have good outcomes. I think sometimes we get into a situation where there's a rush or a panic or a big knee-jerk reaction to things, and the decisions that get made sometimes just don't have the desired impact on people. And I think that's what we really need to be mindful of, I think, in this time and just in general.
I posted a link in the chat to a statement that we recently made, just so that you can also be in the loop, that we on the CRC have been vocal about our response to the protests. I know I keep bringing that up, partially because I'm the chair of the crowd control and use of force work group. And we're gonna be hosting a listening session or a community dialogue next Wednesday at this time. I don't know that I would recommend you attend. I think then, you know, we can give you the information after. I think, you know, probably your attendance would distract from people being able to share their experiences. But I wanna put that on your radar that, you know, again, we have said that we're concerned about police response to the protests. And I think that the way the police are responding to people protesting their brutality is really important to look at. And so, you know, we will continue to I think part of it too, and I'll just be honest, that people feel that the CRC, you know, they don't believe in the system because they feel like anything that we say or do is not taken into account, it's not acted on. So just so you have context, that's kind of the frame that we're working within. And I would, of course, like to see that improve. So that's why I asked you that question of how can we ensure that when we're making, you know, making recommendations, that the people can see their implementation. So I would encourage you, if you could, please get back to us on that. Because I think having you as a new position of leadership, we could hopefully shift what that relationship has looked like in the past so that, you know, our role can have a little bit more authority and impact as we're trying to do our best to reflect the community. So just wanted to throw that out there. Does anybody else have any other questions they want to add?
I have one more, Candace. That's all right. That's all right, Richard Chuck. Have you considered banning the use of CS gas towards protesters, especially during a pandemic that we know attacks the respiratory system? Earlier you said only being used currently when lives are at risk. And I'm curious about last night as it was used, what your thoughts are on that. I just feel like it would mean a lot more to the community if it came from you as the leader in the Bureau, rather than from government officials forcing that to change. I just wanted to ask you that today, and thank you.
Yeah, no problem, Adam. Yeah, you know, for me, I do not want to use that stuff on anyone. I don't, honestly. And there's many nights that we don't. The issue for me is it's a tool to disperse unlawful assemblies or crowds that have become engaged in violent behavior. So, you know, absent that tool, I am in a position now where I have to have my officers face to face with someone and using a baton, like a wooden stick, essentially, to either move them out of the street or, you know, what have you. And then that, you know, when you're talking to a crowd of a few hundred people and you're talking to a couple dozen officers, and now you're in that close contact with a stick, and now, you know, the potential for injury is much greater. The potential for, you know, the police officers to get overrun is much greater. I mean, we're talking about people that are setting fires in, you know, against buildings or in neighborhoods where if a building catches on fire, it could catch residences on fire and things of that nature. We're really talking about the people who are throwing rocks. I mean, like baseball-sized rocks and bottles and full cans of, you know, beer and things at officers. So having that ability to disperse them is important. And that's the tool we have at our disposal currently to do that. But it's definitely not my desire to be using that against folks, but that's the situation we find ourselves in.
And has there been consideration for, you know, when you're deciding that police intervention is needed? Because I think part of the problem is that people feel if they want to stand in the park and shout that they should be able to do that and not have to. I mean, I've seen countless videos of officers bull running, which that was new. I didn't realize that was one of the crowd control tactics. I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are on that tactic. And also just, you know, it seems like for many people that I have heard from that the tension gets escalated. It's not just on the protesters that are escalating, is my point. And so I think that I would really like to see what we're doing in those situations where, you know, it is an officer that is escalating a situation. I actually had a community member ask me, you know, are we documenting when all the officers are using the tear gas or the CS gas? And if we are seeing a pattern that an officer is continuously engaging with protesters in that way, is it possible to say, maybe you're not going to be on the protest line tomorrow because you are unnecessarily escalating a situation? So do you have any protocols like that to decide, you know, who's fit to be out on the streets, you know, especially if they've been out there multiple times? I know that you all mentioned that you're understaffed often, but I think that there has to be some kind of line, in my opinion, on when we're deciding that, you know, of course a fire is a different thing, but when people are standing around and then all of a sudden it gets escalated by tear gas or bull running or whatever, I think that's where people don't understand the intent there.
Yeah, I'll have to say I'm not an expert on tactics. There are all kinds of different ways to, you know, to clear a crowd, but I can't speak to that specific tactic. But I think, again, for us, there are tons of peaceful protesters who are out there every night, and there's no issue with any of that. It's not until, you know, people begin engaging in violent activity and throwing things and, you know, trying to start fires and things of that nature, trying to injure officers, that we move into that other realm of tactics. And there are, we've had these protests going on for almost a month now. And there are, you know, instances where people are like, hey, I have an issue with something an officer did, or I have a complaint. And those complaints end up going to IPR and they get investigated. I mean, there's a definite system for that, a process for that. And, you know, I think when this is over, there'll be a lot of instances that we'll look at, IPR will look at and say, hey, did the officer act appropriately or not act appropriately? And, you know, that's a fair concern. You have people that have been working a lot of hours for a lot of days straight. So there's definitely going to be things to look at, review, and, you know, see if there's maybe even things that, even if it's not an issue of an officer doing something wrong, maybe it's an issue of, hey, maybe we can do this better somehow, and review it, you know, from that aspect as well.
Chief Lavella, who makes the call when, you know, tear gas or something is used? Is it the person that is holding the munitions and they see something? Like, take the worst case scenario. Someone starts a dumpster fire, starts throwing beer cans, rocks, what have you. Does a sergeant have to make that call, a captain? Who's allowed to make that decision?
You know, that decision is made on the ground there, but I don't know if it has to be, you know, a sergeant or, you know, whoever is the operator of that launcher. I mean, that decision is made there, but I don't know if it necessarily has to be the sergeant. But I could find out, though, and answer that for you, Vadim.
Well, the reason I ask is there was a lawsuit in Denver, and the district court judge and the federal district court judge issued an injunction, and the injunction said that it had to be a certain level of police. I think in that instance, it was a captain, and then it was appealed because there's not always a captain on site, but mm-hmm. as sort of a precaution to people who might be tired, who might not be at their best at that particular time of night, to not react unless there's someone in higher authority that authorizes it. And it seemed like a kind of a rational recommendation, but I don't know if there's any thought put into that currently or what the protocol is. I haven't seen a policy on that, at least, if there is one. And that wasn't a question. That was just a
yeah.
I just have one last thing to ask. Are you going to be taking any consideration to reversing the ability for Portland police officers to remove their names and only have their BHU, I think, numbers? Because that is a huge barrier for people who do have a negative interaction to be able to document who that is so that they can put in a complaint.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't given any thought to that, but that's a good concern. I can look at that. I know now they're using a number versus a name tag because they were having people literally Googling them and, you know, making threats to them while they were on the line. So we went away from names, but
yeah, it's a big barrier though for them people who want to actually follow through on a complaint. So thank you for considering that. Okay, any final thoughts?
Just thank you again. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
We are glad you're here and hope we'll see you again.
Yeah, you'll see me again. And before I go, I just want to say I appreciate the work that you do. I'm looking forward to a good partnership with CRC. I got to spend a little bit of time at a couple meetings with Chief Outlaw when she was the chief here. So I'm looking forward to this journey.
Thank you. And we'll see you soon because we have a conference hearing next month.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time. Take care.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and move on. Thanks, everybody, for your questions. So next thing on our list, let me pull up the agenda. We have our director's report. So Ross or Dana, will you go ahead?
Sure. Thank you very much. Let me just pull up our report here. And I think David was going to send this report out to everybody, or I'll link to the report in the chat so everybody will have it if they want to follow along or if they want to look at it later. First off, I just wanted to mention, we talked about this last month at the meeting, but obviously with the pandemic going on, we are not taking in-person complaints at our offices in City Hall, which we normally do. So we are still taking them online. You can email us, you can fill out a track it form. We're taking them by phone, and then we're also taking them via snail mail, which takes a little bit longer, but we have somebody going into the office and checking our mail to make sure that we get all those reports. So those are all options. There's lots of ways to contact us despite the fact that you can't go knock on our door anymore. As to the incoming cases, we've had several thousand contacts. A lot of those have been kind of form letters that have been around subjects around defund the police, disband the police, things like that. And then we've also had about 191 distinct community contacts that are about individual events. Most of those have been protest related. And then we have currently, and we're not done getting through all of those individual community contacts yet, but we've opened up 51 investigations so far. So that number will go up as we work our way through all of that. But this is a tremendous amount of volume for us. This is more than we kind of have ever seen in the history of IPR. So we are working through all those, and our investigators are working hard to make sure we get an initial contact out to everybody who reaches out to us. And then we follow up and take further investigatory steps. In policy reviews, so we take complaints from the community, as you all know, and then we also do policy reviews. We will be releasing in the next few weeks a policy review we've been working on, which has to do with the Police Bureau's weapon flashlight policy. Weapon lights are what they sound like. They're basically flashlights attached to firearms. We have some concerns about some of the ways that those have been used based on information that we've got from the community, as well as research we've done in other jurisdictions. And that mainly has to do with where the switch to turn on the flashlight is and then where the trigger of the firearm is. So it's a pretty obvious concern, but that's something we've been working on for a little bit. We are in the editing phase of that. And then we send that over to the Police Bureau, and they have, I think, usually 2 weeks to provide feedback and to also provide some kind of formal response, which then is released as part of the policy review. So we do several of these policy reviews each year. I anticipate that we will have multiple coming out of the protests. And I think that's something that we really would like to link up to your work groups on. We would like you to be informed on what kind of policy reviews we're interested in. We'd like to hear your ideas and the ideas that you hear from the community about policy reviews that we can work on. And one of the good things about policy reviews is that those can always be released publicly. As Taylor brought up and asked the chief about, you know, there's a lot of criticism about IPR right now, and there's a lot of talk about changing things. I just wanted to mention that we share in the frustration and probably feel that frustration as much, if not more, than most people, because we are not allowed to release our investigations publicly 99% of the time. There are very few exceptions where our investigations are able to be publicly released, but policy reviews are something that can be publicly released. And so there's a lot of you know, if there's something that we kind of continue to see in complaints, we try to work on policy reviews so that we can address that publicly and we can put something out there for the community to see. And we very much want to connect to you all in your work groups to try to inform those and to help us move those forward and you know, to let us know what you think people in the community are interested in. So that's something that we will be working with you in the very near future. I think we are going to have, let's see. Oh, Irene, do you want to go over some outreach stuff, please?
Sure. First of all, I wanted to say that the CRC recruitment is going strong. We're getting applications, and I wanted to remind everyone whose term is expiring either this year or early next year to please apply. We want to continue to work with you. You will have to compete with the new members that apply in a rigorous selection process, and we've contacted community leaders to be in that selection panel, and some of you will also be on the selection team. But in terms of outreach, I've been reaching out to a whole bunch of different organizations, and we've meetings into July and into even August. And just to give you some idea, we have a meeting with Vancouver Avenue First Baptist Church, Disability Rights Oregon. We're also trying to get on Russian TV, if Vadim can join us and talk about the work of the CRC. JOIN, which is an organization that helps the homeless community, we're also reaching out and set up a meeting with the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs, Urban League, Muslim Advisory Council, and next, on July 9th, we're gonna make a presentation on the Slavic Advisory Council. That's just a little bit about the outreach that we've been engaged in. Thank you.
So we've got some at the bottom of our report here. You'll see that we've got a lot of there's a bunch of stats that we put out every month. First, we have kind of our pending caseload and then how old those cases are. As you see, it's gone up dramatically. That number is going to continue to rise for the number of cases that we have at IPR. The kind of the next box down, it shows our number of independent investigations. We're trying to wrap up several independent investigations right now. We've wrapped up a few of them. We've got more to go. And then that number is going to rise dramatically. We have a ton of cases from the protests that are going to go to full investigation. And we have some stats here about the police bureau caseload in internal affairs. And then down at the bottom, we have some numbers and where we are with various officer-involved shootings and in-custody deaths. I would just note that there was an officer-involved shooting the other day on Sunday. Fortunately, nobody was injured in that. A firearm was fired, but nobody was injured. You might have seen that in the newspaper. We can't really talk more about that because it's an open investigation, but that did happen on Sunday. So that's kind of the one you see there at the very top, and that's at the very beginning of its investigation. So I can answer any questions about that. And then the only other thing I wanted to mention is that you know, you see these numbers, you see all these investigations that we do, and we are actively looking at ways that we can, you know, this is going to require changing state statute, and it would require amendments to the police union contract, and it would also require city code changes. But we are actively looking at ways that we can become more transparent so that our investigations can be released. That you know, in kind of in my dream world, releasing our investigations would be the default as opposed to the exception. And right now it is the very, very, very rare exception. You know, I think that there's a lot of criticism of the police oversight system. Sometimes it gets kind of just sounds like criticism of just IPR. We are a part of the accountability system. We are not all of it. CRC obviously is another part of that accountability system. Internal affairs is part of it. The police review boards, which some of you have served on. There's a lot here, and the vast majority of it is not publicly available, which is a huge problem. And I don't think that you could, you know, reasonably ever ask community members to have faith in a process that they can't see working. So we're trying to find ways to improve that. Both Dana and I have been at IPR for a little under a year now. In that time, we've really tried to learn the process, try to figure out how everything works, because it is a massively, massively complicated, far too complicated process. So in that time, we've really tried to learn how this process works and then identify things that we could move forward as far as accountability and transparency. And we've got quite a list that we had dreamed up. And then, you know, all these protests started happening and the microscope really got turned to police accountability. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to move this conversation forward and to really move light years ahead. I think we actually, it might not seem like it from some of the commentary out there these days, but Portland Police Bureau has one of the kind of the most powerful and robust independent civilian oversight systems, but there's only about 145 of those in the whole country. And so while we might be kind of the furthest along, we're close to the furthest along in what is a very young field, and something that really needs to develop and evolve much further. And I think that what you're hearing from community right now exemplifies that and tells us that, you know, these incremental, you know, nibbling around the edges and making little changes here and there is not sufficient. We really need to move this forward by giant leaps. And I think this is something that we would really love to work with CRC, love to work with the work groups about, and have kind of a deeper, meaningful conversation, because it's very, very complicated stuff. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of employee rights and labor law that gets involved in these things. So it's very complex. The devil is certainly in the details, and we look forward to working with you on all this as soon as possible. So any ideas about any of this stuff, please reach out to myself or Irene or David or Dana, and we would love to continue the conversation. Any questions?
Ross, can you give us any idea of how the numbers of complaints might affect the CRC workload down the line? If for every 50 complaints we get one appeal, what are we looking at 6 months from now?
Yeah, you know, I think that the pandemic's certainly a factor too. There's a couple of appeals that are on deck that need to be done. There's a conference hearing, and then there's a couple of appeals that need to be done. And then we need to, you know, we need to see where these other ones go. I think that, you know, a big part of our investigations is our timelines. And so we're always trying to get our cases done within the timelines. The volume that we have right now is certainly, you know, I'm not going to minimize, is certainly going to affect our timelines, but it's much more important that we get these cases done well than that we get them done quickly. So I think that at some point you will start potentially seeing some appeals, but it's going to take a while because we have to kind of work through all this. We're still processing things that are coming in. Like I said, we've opened 51 investigations as of earlier today when I asked somebody to run the numbers. So, you know, for those to go to a full investigation is going to be a few months. I'm hoping that in that time we'll be able to clear the backlog. And then by the time we start getting appeals from kind of this stage, we will hopefully be caught up from the backlog that was created by the pandemic and everybody working from home and the couple months that there weren't CRC appeals happening. So I'm optimistic, but, you know, this is, I guess, I don't think I've been at IPR long enough to be able to give you a great answer. I have no idea how many of these are going to get appealed. It's more volume than I think we've ever seen, certainly than we've seen in the, you know, 9 or 10 months that Dana and I have been here. So, yeah, it's potentially going to be a lot of work. And I think that there will have to be conversations about how we adjust to that. You know, I think CRC volunteers, PSEP volunteers, there's a lot asked of you. You're asked to do these appeals. You're asked to work on these work groups. You're asked to serve on the PRBs. that's a ton to ask someone who you're not paying a whole bunch of money to, let alone to ask of a volunteer. So I think part of that is going to be up to you all to make decisions about, you know, if it gets to this, would you be able to do more than one appeal a month? That's a lot to ask, you know, when we're also asking you to work with us on policy reviews, work with us on the future of police accountability systems in Portland in your work groups. So I think that's going to be something we have to really, really talk about and think through. But I think some big questions about capacity are on the horizon.
I remember when we had multiple appeals a month a few years back, and there were challenges there. I don't think they're insurmountable, but I don't understand logistically how IPR is handling all these thousands of complaints. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that's actually working practically?
Out of the big numbers, that is the thousands, most of those are form letters and they talk about things around the police budget. And so that's not something that we have any say over at IPR. We don't have any say in the police budget. Those are things that, you know, if they didn't already go to the mayor as the police commissioner or city council, we can forward on to those folks. A lot of those have gone to city council, the mayor's office, us, and various places. So a whole bunch of them, we kind of have to, and we spend a lot of time, our investigators spend a lot of time triaging these things and trying to put them in buckets. And so we get, you know, if you're like, okay, we've got 1,000 of these identical letters that are things that we don't have any say over. And so that goes in one bucket. We make sure that, you know, people in city council and the mayor's office are aware of those. And then the things that could have, you know, that could actually reference an encounter with a police officer or something like that, that we might actually be able to look into, those are the ones that we have at this point distilled down to about 191 kind of distinct incidents that we then reach out to. And then so far out of those, we've opened up 51 complaints. We're not done going through all of those. So that number will, as I said before, that number will continue to go up, but it hasn't been, at least at this point, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 individual complaints about individual interactions with police officers. There's been a lot of very general stuff, some of which doesn't even have to do with Portland. It has to do with, you know, the militarization of police in the United States in general, or, you know, defund the police in general or something like that. So it's kind of a lot of triaging and trying to put things in different categories so that we are able to deal with, you know, what we're allowed to deal with under city code.
Thanks.
Hey Ross, are you guys able to scale up at all within the auditor's office? Similar to the question that was just asked about capacity, but just seeing what happened last night, I mean, these are not coming to an end anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I mean, the video I saw last night was repulsive, and how do you guys plan on handling all this? Because this isn't slowing down.
Yeah, I think the short answer is that it's going to have to take as long as it takes. We are short one investigator, so when the hiring freeze, I think, ends at the end of this month, we're hoping to hire another investigator. It's going to be a challenge to hire another investigator when there's potentially a referral to the ballot that would get rid of IPR. I don't know that a lot of people are going to want to apply for that position, so that's kind of a reality. I think one of the very scary things is if our investigators or other people that work at IPR feel like this isn't a safe place to work and they leave and we have less people, that's something that I'm really, really concerned about. So, you know, I think that we have to do these investigations thoroughly. We have to make sure that we exhaust everything and that it is going to take as long as it takes to get through these. And it's hard to know, you know, kind of what that timeline would look like or then what kind of work that'll put on CRC's plate down the road. When there is no end in sight for these protests. And I think whenever, you know, things like last night happen, it kind of continues to push things in the direction of people are going to come out and continue to demonstrate. So, you know, I don't know. This is really uncharted territory in a lot of ways, but we are, we're just going to continue to kind of work our way through it. We've kind of had the first batch go through an initial investigation. And from that point, we decide what goes on for a full investigation, which usually takes a few months. And so we're just kind of working our way through it as best we can. we're kind of readjusting what our investigators do. We've had for the last couple of weeks one investigator who just constantly answers the phone, takes in complaints, talks to people, and just does that initial first touch so that our other investigators are freed up to try to actually process these. Normally they rotate every day, and so we have kind of a person of the day that switches every day. But we were just finding that there was too much friction between, you know, when the day doesn't really end at five, the day goes on and on and on. And how do you draw a line there and trade off from one person to the next? And they might be trying to contact a complainant, and then you kick it off to the next guy who's going to do it the next day. I think we were inefficient in that. So a few weeks back, we switched that up. So we're really striving for efficiency in every way we can. And then as we get into these investigations, you know, the police officers that are on the that are out there dealing with the protests, and there's a lot of them, but we anticipate that we will probably be interviewing the same police officers a whole bunch of times. And so we're trying to figure out how can we best track that and be as efficient as possible so that we can, you know, bring that officer in, interview him about all these different cases so that we save time with our investigators and try to get that done. You know, another issue that has happened so far is that some of our interviews with police officers have had to be rescheduled and pushed back to a later date because the officers aren't available because they're out working the protests, and then they have to sleep at some point. So it's really been a, you know, it's been just a huge impact. Our system really isn't designed. We don't really have the budget or the capacity to deal with things like this. I mean, you know, it goes up and down, and we've had a lot of protests in the past. They're usually a day or maybe 2 days, and then we'll see a significant increase in our workload. But then it kind of usually fades down. We've anticipated that this would be, you know, and this is way before George Floyd, we anticipated this would be a busy season. We were thinking it would be because of the presidential election. So we were really thinking there'd be a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And then we had the pandemic, and now we have the protests. So, you know, we're just trying to keep up as best we can and make sure that we're doing it in a responsible way. But other than that, I haven't heard of any option for us scaling up. But you know, as conversations continue about what the future of police accountability looks like, that's certainly not out of the question for something that we would ask for.
Hey, Ross. Sorry, go ahead, Shana. Hey, sorry everyone for being late. I was in the wrong room. Ross, I had a question, and this is something that I've kind of been thinking about for a while. As I've been participating in doing community committee work with the city and then trying to recruit other folks in community to participate. And I noticed specifically with this committee, it seems like we should have a lot more people from community, especially folks of color, Black folks in particular from the community represented. Part of the problem that keeps coming up is it's expensive to participate, either to physically get to the meetings. Thank you, Indigenous. I see, yes, BIPOC, the full spectrum. And so one of the things I want to plant a seed about is also to look at how can we compensate folks who are coming on so it looks more accessible. And truthfully, we're providing free labor. I mean, for some of us who are attorneys, maybe it's within our salaries, maybe our organizations support this kind of work, you know, but for folks who are not in that line of work, I think providing something reasonable for the expertise and the time commitment, and not to say that I don't love the dinners, but I think you guys are getting a much better value. You know, for what the community would be bringing. And so I know for certain when my mom went and participated with Metro Council, she advocated for this. And of course they said, we don't have any money. And the argument was, well, if you had to hire consultants to come in and do this, you would certainly find the money to be able to make this happen. So right now you're getting free labor from community because staff gets paid. And so in essence, we are a supplement to that. And so I think, you know, finding, they were able to work out about $100 per meeting And so when we start talking about these subgroups and, you know, recruiting folks to come in, this time starts to add up. And then plus, you know, in preparation, some folks have to read up, you know, and have to look into these statutes and look into these ordinances and policies. And so some of us who are already engaged in this work, you know, that makes sense. It's not too far-fetched, but for folks who are in community who this isn't their work, they have to devote extra time to it. So I just wanted to propose that out there. I've definitely been trying to recruit for more community members, but I think one of the issues is I don't have the time or the resources to devote to do this, and I don't trust the process. So I think if maybe in good faith some compensation is offered, you know, to community members, and if folks want to waive out of it because their jobs support them and they don't need it, great, that can go to somebody else. But just wanted to throw that out there as a suggestion.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. You know, especially in a time where with the pandemic, some people have their kids at home 24 hours a day and are trying to teach their kids and are trying to deal with all that and hold down a job. And, you know, we might have, I'm not sure if we were talking about this before you were there or not, but, you know, CRC members are asked to serve on the PRB, to do appeals, and to be in these work groups, to be in an advisory capacity to both the Bureau and IPR. And that's a ton. I think that's a flawed structure. I think you're asking too much of volunteers to do that. I think if you need to spread that work out a little further. How you would actually achieve that, I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can do it. And I think the CRC would be the ones that should be, you know, have the loudest voice in that discussion. But that's a ton that you're asking of people. And then, you know, if because of the protests and because of the volume of complaints we're getting in, if, you know, a few months down the road, several months down the road, we're asking people to do multiple appeals per month, as Julie said, has happened in the past, you know, that's a lot more work. To read the files for some of these, to get prepared for an appeal takes a ton of time. I think the last officer involved shooting PRB, the file was 2,400 pages long. So if somebody, you know, volunteers for that, that's a ton of time. And that's, you know, that's not even discussing work groups or anything like that. I think you're totally right. I think if this is going to be meaningful community engagement and community input, you got to find a way to make that work. Otherwise, you're kind of nominally, you know, saying, yeah, we do, you know, we ask the community what they want to do, but then you don't really make it possible for them to actually weigh in a meaningful way. So, you know, that leads to turnover, that leads to people getting burned out, and that leads to kind of everything just staying the same. So I absolutely agree with you. I think that's a really, really important point.
I also just want to add in two other small little, maybe not so small factors right now because we're meeting remotely. I think some of this work may ultimately be a little more accessible than what it had been before, but it also depends on the technology that folks in community have available, Wi-Fi services, electronics. But even prior to that, when we were meeting in person, you know, folks had to come out off from work early, you know, take multiple modes of transportation, you know, then they're taking time off of work. So I think all of those things are arguments that kind of add to, if we're really making this an inclusive opportunity for people to be part of it, which again, a big part of the protesting that we're seeing is about reforming the way that we do this work. And so if we're really serious about getting people in the community involved, we have to make a way to make that happen for them.
Well, I just wanted to jump in and add that the Office of Civic and Community Life sent out a survey, and that is something that they're looking at, is some form of compensation for the volunteer, all the volunteers, and there are close to 100 different volunteer boards and commissions. So that is something the city is talking about.
That already came out, Irene, or when?
There was a survey that was sent a few months ago, just before we all went home. So the city is in conversation about that. I'm pretty sure the survey closed, but that is something.
I'm on several and I don't think I received the survey.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll have to tell the coordinator to add you.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Do we have other questions? Okay. Thank you, Ross, for your report.
Thank
you. We'll go ahead and move on now. All right, agenda. So next up, we have my report. Okay. So Vadim and I met with the mayor on Monday. And there's only so much we can cover in 30 minutes. I wish we had an hour so that we could really get through a lot of our questions. But we spent most of our time discussing, obviously, the protests. That was something that I needed to, you know, get some information on. And, you know, I know that the mayor is in a tough position, being the mayor and the police commissioner. I think that I am a reasonable person, reasonable enough to understand that it is really challenging to manage that situation. However, I think there have been lines crossed, especially when it comes to arresting the journalists and things like that. So things have been changing quickly. I also attended the community event that was held on Friday afternoon outside of the Mid-K Beauty in response to what happened Thursday evening at the North Precinct. And it was interesting to hear the different community members' perspectives. Obviously, their businesses are important to them, and having those being vandalized is not okay, especially when they're minority-owned businesses. So we had a fruitful discussion about it. We don't always agree. But I thought, you know, it was helpful to just kind of hear from him, his side of it. And I think that what came out of that conversation was us talking about how are we going to be part of the solutions. The mayor recently had sent out that 19-point plan, and there's kind of a lot going on in City Hall, not only with Mayor or Commissioner Hardesty and her efforts. I participated in a meeting this weekend. For folks talking about that ballot measure, there's a lot of details that are still not figured out, but I'll definitely keep you all posted as I hear them. But, you know, so there's kind of that effort going on, and then there's also the mayor wanting to act on that 19-point plan. So what we decided was that Nicole, one of his policy advisors who attends our meetings, she's connecting us with another policy advisor that is being charged with or tasked with getting people together to talk about implementation of all these different demands. So that's something that the mayor has made a commitment to include us on and wants us to take a lead on that, which, you know, I think this is a good opportunity for us to step up. Again, in the conversation we just had, it is a lot of work, but I wanna put it on your radar that he is going to be turning to us to help lead the conversation and also bring together like the PSEP and the TAC and all the advisory boards and the community and the police and everybody that's a stakeholder in this. And I think that definitely a big, at least what I would like to see is a way that we engage the community and try to bring in people that aren't part of the conversation currently. So I think that's gonna be the next big step in deciding like what part we play. I think getting information is going to be critical right now. So we'll keep you posted on that and how that's going to look. We have an email chain going with an introduction with that policy advisor who is going to be taking the lead on that. I'll keep you all posted, but wanted to make sure it's on your radar that you know, this is going to be some work coming up for us. Also, I'm sure you all saw today that the police contract was extended for 1 year. There have been, you know, of course, people who disagree with that decision, others who think it was the best option given the circumstances. I do think that having an opportunity in a year to have a full community process is important. And also, for those that are not aware, Daryl Turner, the PPA president, is going to be transitioning out by the end of this year. So that means the new president will be at the negotiation table. So I know we have been talking about how the CRC can be involved in the contract discussion. So the update is that we'll have to wait for the next time that those come up. But I did also put it on the radar that, you know, we want to be part of that. Vadim and I met with the PSEP chairs and the TAC chair in the last couple of weeks. We have been working on putting out a statement. Partially, the goal of the statement is to just, you know, assert our existence and encourage the city council to, you know, include us in these discussions. Things move fast, so I feel like, you know, we were working on that statement, and then we were working with certain city council members. There's kind of a lot of moving parts right now. I think we probably still will put that out. We decided that was going to come from the chairs as a united front to show how we're planning on collaborating on these efforts. And I know there's going to be a listening session, right, with PSEP, Vadim, next Thursday. Is that, that's public, right? And you're muted.
Next Thursday, 5 to 7, it will be public. And I think the Zoom information is out there, but because we're not sure exactly who is going to be present, we haven't sent it out yet, but it will be on the PSEP website, and I'll share it with you all, or Candace will share it with everybody. It's going to have Commissioner Hardesty. It's going to have representatives from IPR and the auditor's office. Candace will hopefully be there as well. And there's going to be a pretty vibrant conversation around the future of police oversight, I have a feeling. And it's going to be the first, I think, in a series of such conversations. And certainly will be important to everybody present here.
Yeah.
Yes, if you could please send that information. I'm sure many of us would like to attend if we can.
Yes, I will do that. And then lastly, you know, our CRC Facebook page is live. We're currently streaming to it. Currently, Adam and I have management, what is it, permissions? I don't know what I'm trying to say. We are both managing the page. And so definitely open for folks that if you would like to be a part of that management team, let us know. I think right now we're still trying to figure out how we're going to use that, and that will be a task for the Policy and Outreach Committee to decide how we can expand our reach on social media. But it is available, and I'll put the link, I'll drop the link here in the chat so that folks in the audience can also join the page to stay updated. Okay. That is all of my updates, I think. Yes. So let's go ahead and move into new old business. It's 6:46. I want to just take a temp check. Can we do like a 5-minute break? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I guess it could be under policy and outreach. I was just wanting to talk about the meetings with commissioners. Should we talk about it under policy and outreach?
Yes, let's talk about it in a second. Is it cool if we take a quick 5 minutes? Because I know I need to use the restroom. So is that all right with folks? Okay, it is 6:46, be back 6:51. Thank you. Okay, so let us, I'll start by, okay, hold on. Let's go ahead and talk about what you brought up, Julie, since I don't have a specific place for it. I can talk about that right now. So folks, I had emailed you about choosing or telling me your preferences for a commissioner that you will be assigned to. So I will post in the chat here which one you are assigned to. I forgot to send that out, my bad. But I did assign everybody. And right now, I mean, obviously this is, we do not know what the outcome of today's elections will be, but if it is the case that Vadim and I continue to serve, then we'll meet with the mayor, and if not, then we'll change that up. And then I have Julie, Sylvan, and Andy with Commissioner Udaly. I have Hillary, Jihan, and Carol with Commissioner Fritz, and Adam, Taylor, and Shayna with Commissioner Hardesty. Did you have a specific question about that, Julie, or did you just want to know where you were?
No, that's helpful. But also just kind of, you mentioned, monthly meetings with them, which I think would be great. And that's certainly more than I know that I've been doing historically with, Commissioner Udaly, previously with Hillary. And so I was wondering, had you been in contact with any of these folks, to like
create an understanding around or an expectation around those meetings, or should we do that individually? I wasn't sure how much conversation had already taken place.
So, you know, I think in the past we have left it up to people to do that, but I do think that it could be useful for me to just send an email to all of them to let them know that you're coming. And then the three of you that are with that commissioner can reach out personally and say, hey, you know, you got the email from Candace and we're your liaisons. Can we set up a meeting? So does that work?
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be, that would be good. And then the idea is that we would take that individually and then try to establish a regular standing meeting time. Okay.
So I can do that. I'm adding it to my list here and I'll try to get that done before the end of the weekend. Okay.
Are we generally meeting directly with the commissioner, or are we meeting with one of their policy people, or how do these meetings normally, what's the expectation generally?
They are directly with the commissioner, yes.
And when I've met with Commissioner Udaly, she's also had a policy person present, but both.
So, and the goal is to build a relationship with them, keep them in the loop about what CRC is up to, hear from them what their perspective is on what we can work on, and just be a bridge between all of the commissioners. And that's super helpful, especially when we're wanting to communicate something that we'd like them to do or act on, so that we can have that relationship built. And then when that those kinds of situations arrive, it's like, okay, go talk to your liaisons. You know, ask them if they're going to be in support. A good example of that was when we were advocating for our standard of review change, and the different liaisons were tasked with bringing that up to the commissioners, getting a feel for were they in support of it, that kind of thing. Cool. Okay. Next on my list for new old business, I've got CRC email account. What do we need to know about this, David? I put it on there, but I'm not actually sure what we need to discuss.
Well, I need to know, well, IPR needs to know if the whole committee would like individual email account, like.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so yeah, we had brought up that we wanted to see from folks if they want to have a personal email that is just for CRC, or, you know, just in general, what people think about that. So let's open the floor. What would you all like?
So I've kind of talked about this in the past. I have a Portland.gov, PortlandOregon.gov email from PSIP. I found it really useful because one, it's a different mailbox, so it doesn't get kind of mixed in with my day-to-day email and makes that a little untenable. But also, with respect to reviewing our files, you can use that government login information for everything, for your email, as well as reviewing the appeals that we have. And I've also used it when they test drove the PRB review process. So if they ever do this online where they take the whole case and put it, digitize it all and let us view it that way, it'll also be that email address. So it's kind of a one-stop shop, whatever it is, you know, the term, for everything. So I found it pretty useful.
I fully support this. And I will need to change my email address. I want to have a separate account for this work anyways. And I'm hoping we can do it this way.
Other thoughts?
Go ahead.
Well, are there restrictions that we should know about in terms of privacy, or like what can be said? Are there privacy concerns that we should be aware of?
Well, the only problem is that the city email account, the password expires every 3 months. So it's up to you guys to call our IT department to get the password reset every 3 months.
You have to call IT to reset your password?
Yes. Yes.
Yikes. Well, okay.
I mean, like, if you work within the city network, then you can easily change the password. But since you're outside the city network, then you're going to have to call our IT department to change that.
Okay. As long as you all don't have to do that, because that would be silly. Okay.
So if we're in the Exchange or we're doing remote login, we wouldn't be able to simply get it like an update password notification, David?
No, you have to be internal to change your password. Otherwise, you have to call BTS, which is or IT department.
Gotcha. And just to add on to the, or tag on, excuse me, to the previous question. So with regards to the public records, if we opted to use our personal emails or however we have this set up right now without a designated account, then all of our personal information would be subject to public records?
No.
Okay. Clarify
so when you guys conducting CRC business, if mm-hmm. as long as you CC me in your email, I can save that in a folder, and that can be used for public record purposes.
Yeah, that's what I tend to do. Is anything CRC, I just CC David so that is included in the public record. But that way, it's not all my inbox. And I think one thing that could be problematic, or I don't, maybe it's a barrier, is just that, so you know how we've been using the Google Drive, even though I'm not sure that we're supposed to, and I'm gonna wait until somebody tells me not to. So I think we'll just, I mean, we kind of have a system in there. So I think, I don't know that it necessarily affects it, but just wanted to bring that up that you mean you're, I'm assuming those PortlandOregon.gov aren't going to work in the drive necessarily. So something to consider. And also David and I talked about how we're going to set it up so that the CRC at PortlandOregon.gov email gets sent to me so that I can just be helping to field whatever's coming through there. David obviously checks that and forwards things as necessary, but that way it's just an automatic forward. So that, you know, in case David's not around, we can see things coming in. So in general, can I get a yes, want an email, no, unsure? I see some thumbs. Where's Carol and Jihan's thumbs? Yes, maybe. Okay, so everybody's either here or here. So I say we go ahead and move forward with it, David. You want to start setting us up?
Yeah, we'll talk about it with our director, and then we'll figure it out.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on.
Can I mention something? If somebody doesn't want to use the .gov email, I think we can discuss about how to make that optional. I think in PSEP there's one member that doesn't really answer the .gov but answers a personal one, and that's fine. It just means that I think as long as the .gov recipient gets the email, then it's still within the system for purposes of tracking and all that kind of stuff. So for those that are thumbs sideways, you can have a choice not to use it, I'm sure.
And David, would we have an option to forward our emails from our PortlandOregon.gov?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, because that's what I think that could be. That's probably what I'm gonna do. So if that's an option, then yeah. Okay, any other questions then? All right, let's keep moving. So CRC retreat. Now, originally we had discussed that we wanted to do a joint retreat with PSEP and TAP. I think that is still on the table for the future, but we're gonna go ahead and move forward with having an internal, just CRC retreat for now. Because I think it'd be good for us to just spend a couple hours getting centered on what our goals are, a strategic plan, and figuring out, you know, how we want to distribute the work moving forward. So I have a schedule send email ready to come out to y'all at 9 o'clock, but I'm going to send you here to the panelists, a doodle poll. I selected some dates. I basically did a couple Wednesdays coming up from this time. You know, we do 5:30. I set aside 4 hours. I think that's a lot, but we can make it work. And then, so there's some 5:30 to 9:30 options for people that want to keep it Wednesday nights. And then I put some weekend options for people if you feel that is more free in your schedule. So y'all hopefully have done a doodle before, just put in all your options. I'll take a look at that. We'll get that scheduled. And again, the goal is just going to be for us to discuss our plans. Also get to know each other a little bit since we haven't really done that quite yet. I know that in the past, when it comes to the retreats, there have been questions on, are those open to the public or not? The last time we did a retreat where, I mean, it was in person and we were at McMinniman's, we had the first 3 hours of the 4-hour retreat be just us. And then we invited the public to come in for the last hour. So we could do something similar. I think though the nature of what we're here to do or what we're gonna talk about is much more like strategic planning, whereas that other one was a little bit more like get to know you-ish. So, and honestly, I think with the webinar feature, it makes it pretty easy for people to participate or to be listening in, but you know, it doesn't have to be a distraction. Not that anybody has been distracting us. I appreciate all the public who are here and engaging with us. But just wanted to throw that out there because I guess in the past, some people felt uncomfortable with the idea of having the public there when you're doing things like icebreakers or whatever. But we've got a new group, so I want to just get a feel. Do we feel okay with having the public being at the whole thing? Do we want to do something like that where we say they're only coming for part of it? What are people's thoughts? Go ahead, Julie.
Oh, I guess if we were sort of on the fence about it, I would say make as much of it public as possible, just in spirit of transparency and openness and building trust through people getting to know each other. Even people kind of witnessing us getting to know each other, I think could be beneficial to the wider community. So that's my opinion.
I agree with that. Any other thoughts? Anybody like strongly against having something like that and want to work and have some kind of system where the public is only invited for part of it? Okay. Well, then I think we should just do it webinar style again, and we can, you know, I know it stinks to be online all day. I just had a 3-day 9-to-5 training with my students on Zoom, and it was exhausting, but it's doable. And so I know we can make it work to be retreaty like. I've done lots of retreats in the last few weeks over Zoom. So
maybe David can have food sent to our houses.
Yeah, send us like a Dine Dash or whatever it's called. DoorDash? Dine Dash? I don't know. I don't use those systems clearly.
I'm pretty sure we all have a McMinniman's in our neighborhood.
Awesome. Okay, any other thoughts on that? So again, you'll get an email at 9. I sent you the doodle in the chat. Please fill it out ASAP so you can get something scheduled. I have the first one, first date available for the 19th, just so I can have some time to prepare for it. And part of the email that you're gonna get as well, and it's something that I sent out before, which is a visioning doc. I have a certain way that I do strategic planning, and part of that process is you need to just get everything out there. What pie in the sky, absolute like wish list of what you think we should be working on, what we are. So I want you to think big and outside of the box, because then we'll spend time just narrowing it down and making it obviously logistically and, you know, realistically feasible. But that exercise is an important part, and that'll be part of that pre-work for the retreat, because I'll need to go through that and prepare that for our conversation. I might have another pre-work thing, but for now, just do that. And you'll get the email. Okay, cool. Moving on. So the crowd control and use of force work group just wants to put it on everybody's radar that we are having a community discussion next week. I mentioned that earlier. You all should have a calendar invite for it. I think what I wanna get out of this right now, since we don't have another crowd control work group in between now and next week, I wanted to just check in on folks that would like to help with facilitation and with note-taking. For some context, basically I have structured it in the exact same way that we did the last retreat or the last community dialogue that was in person. The way we had that was we had 4 specific areas, and we had people rotating tables. That turned out to be a little bit more disruptive, and we wanted to just rotate facilitators next time, which I think we'll do this time. but essentially community members were asked to speak on thoughts on de-escalation, training, bias, and use of equipment. So the way we'll do it via Zoom is we're gonna not do a webinar style, we'll do it the regular style so that we can have the breakout rooms. And what I need is a facilitator and a note taker for each breakout room, essentially. You'll have a list of questions that you'll be able to read, but you also just mostly just managing, you know, the conversation, making sure people get heard. But we want to break it up into smaller groups because it's just easier to, for people to be heard in that way. And I have basically, like I said, I just copied the entire structure that we did last time because that seemed to work. So, you know, you'll get everything you need as far as, you know, tools to prepare to be a facilitator or a note taker. But I wanted to, while we're all here, ask who's willing to step up into those roles so that I can have that prepared and make sure that, you know, when I set up the breakout rooms, whatever, we got all that organized. So I already have a another community member who sits on the crowd control work group has emailed me to say they could be a note taker. So I have one. I think I'm setting it up to, I don't know how many people are going to show up. Last time we had 30 people, but that was in person. I imagine because it's virtual, we could probably get more. So I think we should expect to have 4 breakout rooms. Because even if we get 100, you know, it's like 25-ish, maybe even 5 breakout rooms just in case.
Shana? So Candace, so you know this is what we do at Race Talks, right? So we had our first virtual forum. We announced it in 2 days. And we had 550 people register, and we had 350 people actually participate. So my concern, and we do actually have facilitated dialogue, so my only concern with the breakouts is depending on how much time is actually allocated, it might not actually work out to allow enough people to have talk time and enough facilitators. So a thought is maybe write up facilitator description and note taker description. And depending on, I don't know if there's a pre-registration that you'll ask people to do. I've seen with some dialogue groups, some government committee entities have requested a pre-registration, some haven't. I personally tend to err on the side of registering just because I think it kind of helps identify people and conveys a sense of transparency, especially if you're asking folks to show themselves in the video. But if people call in, then that's not an option, or if call in is even going to be available. But maybe just saying, giving a heads up to people that there'll be breakout groups, and, you know, based on how many people show up, maybe often, you know, try to divide it into a manageable number, maybe 10 people per group or something. You know, if it's 30 people, then you could probably have facilitators, but if you get in the hundreds.
Yeah, and I just forwarded, because I sent this stuff just to the crowd control work group initially, but I just forwarded it to the rest of you. We do already have a script for what the note taker, what the facilitator does. All of that is laid out. So I just forwarded it to everybody because I, you know, not everyone was on that original email. But the goal is, I definitely, I don't know how many people are going to show up. Currently on Facebook, we have like 30 people saying going and 100 interested. That doesn't mean much in Facebook world. But who knows? People really could show up. I think that, you know, we kind of put this together last minute because we wanted to be more responsive. That was definitely one of the things where, you know, the last one, we weren't able to be as responsive to things happening in the moment. So I think there's pros and cons there. And part of the con is the hurriedness makes it difficult to get all the facilitators maybe we would want. But I think if we can step up and if people are able to be there and help, then that's what I'm trying to get a feel for, because
an event created on Facebook since we have a Facebook page?
Yeah, that's what I just said. There's 100 people.
Oh, that's what you said? Mm-hmm. Okay, then we'll post it on Race Talks and let folks know.
Yeah, it's on the page. So okay. Can I get a feel for one, who is able to be there next week? This is next Wednesday, the 8th at 5:30 p.m. Okay. So we've got Taylor. Let me write this down. Taylor, Adam, Sylvan, Carol. Who else can be there? Did I miss any hands? No. Okay. So, and then obviously me. And then I know I have a community member who's coming. So that puts us at 6 people. That would make us, that would be, give us the ability to have 3 breakout rooms. I mean, I totally get that it could, we could be overwhelmed by it, but I don't know. What are people's thoughts? Do we feel comfortable? I mean, at this point, we've got to move forward with it. But do I need to be reaching out to more folks for facilitation?
We have an event for Race Talks the following evening, so that's my hesitancy to commit. So I can definitely pitch it to our facilitators, because I mean, I think facilitation skills traverse whatever the conversation is, but you know, we have a team of probably about 10 or so that I could ask and see if they're available during those hours. I'm not, generally we have our own team meeting, you know, the night before our own event. So that's my own hesitation, but we can, let me check in with our folks and see kind of if they'd be able to help out, because I think this is really important. And so I want to support, but I don't want to overcommit.
Okay. And I have a list of facilitators that we tapped last time that I can send, but I wanted to get a feel for people here. There's definitely a crunch. I'm feeling the crunch of time. So for the people that I have here, Taylor, Adam, Sylvan, Carol, are you all feeling facilitator or note taker roles would be best for you? I'll start with Taylor.
To be honest, I've never done any facilitating, and so I don't know what to expect, if I would be going off of a script or if there'd be some ideas of like how to facilitate those discussions. Like, I could possibly be open to it, but I want to be helpful, but I also like don't want to botch it if I'm not a great facilitator, or like if I don't know what I'm doing, I don't want to hinder conversation. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, there could be somebody better for it. I don't know.
Okay. So I'll put you as a question mark facilitator, but for now, note taker. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
So if I get more of those other facilitators, then. But I do plan on, there's, you know, some pre-written questions. Really, it's just about giving people space to just talk about their experiences. That's really how we ran it last time. Making sure, you know, having a couple of prompts, but trust me, people just, they don't need a lot of prompts. They'll come with things that they want to say. And then, you know, obviously just making sure if somebody's being, you know, disrespectful or interrupting, that's a big part of the facilitator role. And then the note taker role is to, there's a doc where you'll just be typing in information to collect the data. Okay, Adam.
I'm happy to facilitate, but either whatever you need.
Okay. I'm going to put you down as facilitator then. Sylvan.
I can take notes.
Okay. Carol. You're muted, Carol.
Yeah. I'm going to be a note taker this time.
Okay. And then I can be a facilitator, and then like I said, I have a community member who's already signed up for a note taker. So if I can get a couple more facilitators, then we can just have more breakout rooms. So I'll work on that, getting that out. But I'll sign you all up for what you just mentioned. Sound good? There will be more emails in this week with more information, but that one email I just forwarded to everybody has a lot of info there with all the documents, with all the templates and all of that. Okay, any questions about that? All right, we're gonna move on. Next on the agenda, work groups. Okay, so Part of our meeting last time was to discuss the reorganization of our work groups, how we're going to distribute that work, et cetera. So first of all, one thing that we need to address is the recurring audit work group. So currently, and I had sent you all that email or that link earlier that showed you your city council liaison assignment. In there is also, you can see the work group assignments. Hillary is not here, so I am still not sure. Well, actually, she is saying that she's not going to be a worker. I have currently the only person, therefore, is Jihan on recurring audit. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that I think Ross had brought this up to me and I thought was a good idea, was possibly turning the recurring audit work group, combining that with future of oversight. So it has its own space as well, you know, because we've kind of combined, you know, crowd control use force, policy outreach. I feel like recurring audit and future of oversight, that way you have a more robust, what's the word I'm looking for? Things to do. There's a word, but I can't think of it.
Hope is probably the word.
Yeah. So, you know, let's talk about what we're going to do about that, because obviously Jihan cannot be the only person on that work group. And how do we feel about possibly turning that work group into also a future of oversight?
So my thoughts about that, if I may, is depending on what the work group decides to focus on for the recurring audit, it could actually be a lot of work on its own. When we started the recurring audit last year, in its previous iteration and didn't get very far with it, we were looking at reviewing about 50 police or investigative files. And, you know, you've all seen investigative files. Those range in various sizes and they can take up a lot of time. So in addition to appeals and PRVs and, you know, everything else that we've been talking about, I'm not sure. Again, it depends. It's going to depend on what the work group decides to focus on for the recurring audit. I'm not sure that that is a feasible scope to extend it that way. But okay. I would like to see the future of oversight being addressed somewhere.
I totally agree with that. From my understanding of that work group, I think it's not a lack of work. I personally think it could use a little rebranding. I think that reoccurring audit is the most boring name I can ever imagine. And so I'm not kidding. I would think about renaming it and not changing the scope of the work, because it's actually really interesting work. But who wants to join something called reoccurring audit?
Sound like you're volunteering, Julie.
I can be on the marketing committee to rebrand it, but I'm not necessarily volunteering for that committee. But maybe I am. I'll think about that. I'll think about it.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, right now we have on crowd control, use of force is me, Sylvan, Andy, Taylor, Adam. And then on policy outreach, we have me, Vadim, Julie, Carol, Adam, Shayna. So, I mean, I don't know how else to put it other than Jihan can't be by herself. So are there people that are willing to switch over to recurring audit from their current assignment? How do we want to approach this?
I've taken over as the chair of the policy and outreach subcommittee, in my view, temporarily. So as soon as kind of everybody's up to speed, I think both Shayna and Adam have noted, and perhaps other people, that they would like to kind of perhaps do more work down the road. So I'll join the recurring audit. Right now, I don't think I have enough time, but hopefully in a month to whatever that time may be, I'll have more. So, yeah, I'll join.
Okay.
I was actually going to say that having a lawyer on that committee, I think, is really valuable.
Okay. Okay.
That's the first time I've ever heard that in my life. I usually see
no way. No. I don't believe that. Okay. So I guess, are we saying we're going to be on hold for recurring audit until Vadim can join?
I mean, I'll join. I don't know how much work I can put into it. So I'll be there for any meetings. I just don't have the bandwidth right now to start reviewing stuff for maybe a month or two.
Okay. And I'm hoping that once Hillary is able to take on the responsibility of a work group as well, then we can put her on that. Because she was already on that, right, Jihan?
Yes, she was.
Okay. Okay. Any other thoughts, or I guess, is it settled for now? Okay. The other thing about the work groups, I did notice that in the agenda, did policy and outreach, did you all change your mission, like you made your new mission statement?
No, it was me who changed it, because...
Oh.
I have to modify it so that it would fit with the title of the work group. So,
okay. So then crowd control use of force has not yet finished doing that either. We didn't get to it in our last meeting. So this link will also be in your, what's it called? In that email that I have scheduled to go out. But I'm going to post it in here. Let's just, please, between now and the next meeting, let's get those work group descriptions updated. I made a Google Doc for it. That way it can just all be in one place. I think that's something you could easily just do over email. But let's prioritize getting that done so that by the next agenda, we have our updated mission statements. Okay? Cool. All right, now we're going into CRC elections. We are finally at that point of the agenda. So the way this is going to work, and David sent me a page here. I don't know that I need to read all of this, David. Do you think
No, you don't. Yeah, you can just say the main stuff.
Okay. Maybe I'll just, how about I just post the link so you all can see what I'm reading. But this is just the part that explains what the elections are or how they go for the CRC. Essentially what we are going to do is every year we need to have elections for our new chair, vice chair, and recorder. Hold on. Sorry, I had to yell at my cat. So the CRC chair, the term of office is 1 year. Typically, these things happen in April, but COVID. So that's why we're doing it now. And what we'll do is we'll go through and have people nominate. You can nominate yourself or you can nominate somebody else. And there needs to be a second to the nomination. And then obviously the person that you're nominating needs to accept that nomination. And then we'll just do a quick round of why you are running for that spot. And then we'll do a vote, okay? The chair, the roles, the chair is responsible for conferring with the vice chair and the recorder and IPR staff to get the monthly agendas together, facilitate the meetings, work with IPR, the auditor, and others to address issues of importance to the CRC, and just be in charge of reviewing communication that people have with the CRC. The vice chair is responsible for obviously working with the chair and the recorder on that monthly agenda, facilitating CRC meetings and hearings in the absence of the chair, and working on issues of importance to the CRC with the aforementioned people. The recorder facilitates the meetings in the hearing and hearings in the absence of both the chair and the vice chair. They also work with us on the monthly recorder or monthly agenda and issues of importance to the CRC. Also, the recorder is usually in charge of keeping time. We didn't really keep time last time that we had public comments. I don't know if we want to, we can. Let's talk about that when we get there. But that's also another thing that the recorder has tended to do. In addition to, we have tasked the recorder with being the person that kind of keeps track of what the parking lot items are. So, you know, in our meetings, keeping track of, oh, we want to make sure we do this by the next meeting, or we're putting on our to-do list that we're going to do this, this, and that. So we task the recorder with keeping track of our CRC parking lot. Make sense? Okay. Is there a particular order I need to do it in, David? Should I do chair, vice chair, recorder, or go backwards?
No, there's no particular order. It's up to you.
Okay. Is there a preference for anybody else that, in what order we do it? Okay. Well, then I guess we'll do the chair first. So we will open it up for nominations. Again, you can nominate yourself or you can nominate somebody else.
I'd like to nominate Candace. You've been doing a great job. Would like to see you keep on doing it for longer.
Thank you. Thank you. I accept. I was planning on running as well, so thank you. Are there any other folks that would like to run for chair? Just because I'm running doesn't mean you can't. No? Okay. Well, okay, no last call for nominations. All right. Thank you. I appreciate the nomination, Vadim and Julie. Obviously, I'm very invested in this work. I really care about what we're doing on the CRC. I think that we have a really big opportunity right now to meet this moment and really push for the reforms that we've been asking for. And I'm super committed to continuing to move our agenda and make sure that we're organized. And I do think that I have some skills to bring to the table to help us get there. So I appreciate your support and I would appreciate your vote. Thanks. Okay. Any other comments or I guess maybe questions? People have questions? No? Okay. Well, then I guess we'll move forward with a vote. So I will call your name and then you will state your vote and your, do we still have to do like reason?
No, I think that's the reasoning is applying towards like the appeal stuff.
Okay.
Not, perfect. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, hold on, let me write a thing here. All right, I will call on you and you will give your vote. So I guess the motion, do I need to ask for a motion, David?
Vadim already made a motion.
Oh, right, that was
And Julie seconded it.
That's right, thank you. All right, Adam.
Aye, yes.
Okay. Julie.
Yes.
Taylor.
Yes.
Jihan.
Yes.
Vadim.
Yes.
Sylvan.
Yes.
Carol.
Yes.
Shayna.
Yes.
And myself, I vote yes. What if I voted no? Wouldn't that be funny? Okay, thank you, everybody. I appreciate your vote, and I'm looking forward to serving as your chair for the next year. And I do plan on reapplying because my term is coming up to an end. So I will be reapplying to stay on the CRC as well. Moving on, we're going to go into the vice chair nominations. I would like to start by nominating Vadim.
Second.
Do you accept, Vadim?
I accept. Should I say anything now or wait until any other nominations?
Yep, let's wait and see any other nominations for vice chair. Okay, seeing none, then let's go ahead and move forward. Vadim, if you want to share a few thoughts.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is a really transformative period for police oversight, for IPR, and certainly for the CRC. I'm a bit perplexed that we're not more involved in the process. And I've certainly, I think, built some connections during my last few years volunteering with the city, and I hope to be able to use that to get us a seat at the table so we can kind of decide our own future rather than have that decided for us, as well as work with the staff that we've been working on in IPR and the get us everyone in the same direction. So that's my goal.
Awesome. Any comments or questions for Vadim? Okay, then we're going to go ahead and move into a vote. Adam.
Yes.
Julie.
Yes.
Taylor.
Yes.
Jihan.
Yes.
Vadim.
Yes.
Sylvan.
Yes.
Carol.
Yes.
Shayna.
Yes.
And I am a yes. Congratulations, Vadim, new vice chair.
Thank you.
Partner in crime. Wait, not crime. Mm-hmm. Awkward. All right, and then finally, we've got the position of recorder open. So I will take nominations for recorder. I would like to nominate Adam. Your face.
I'll second.
Okay. Do you accept that nomination, Adam?
Would anyone else be interested?
Are there other interests before Adam decides?
So to give people context, in the job, well, I shouldn't call it a job, but it's really interesting because you're sort of the go-to person when people have questions about process and how things work within the CRC. So you're kind of the repository of perhaps some historical knowledge as well as protocols and, you know, what things generally entail. So it's not just a recorder taking notes or being the chair when the not present or something like that. You're really a person who learns a lot about IPR and CRC, in my view. That's pretty cool.
And luckily we have the amazing David Nguyen who takes our minutes. So like I said, you are in charge of the parking lot, but we do get some support with the minute taking from David.
Yeah, as far as I know, the recorder mainly deal with parking lot issues and making sure that the recorder at our meeting or physical meeting is turned on and record. There's not much to it.
And being part of the leadership team to just, you know, help oversee the rest of the group, make sure everybody's working on stuff.
I'll do it. I was hesitant being so new to this group that I wanted to give other people an opportunity for leadership if that was a direction you wanted to go. But I agree with everything that you both have said about this opportunity and the time that we're in, and just to have a seat at this table is really important to me. So thank you.
Awesome. Any
just real quick, somebody had asked in the chat about our two missing members.
Ah, yes.
Is it possible that maybe they would be interested?
If they were interested, they would have needed to mention it prior to the meeting if they weren't going to be here. And nobody told me they weren't going to be here. So.
Yeah, I didn't get any advance notice that those people are missing either.
Well, I think we knew Andy wasn't going to be here.
Yes, that's true. Yes, and Andy has a newborn child, and she's out for a couple months, but she didn't tell me like exactly when she's gonna be back. So, Hillary, I haven't heard from her.
Adam, were there any other thoughts you wanted to share? Any other comments or questions? Okay, let's move into a vote. Adam.
Yes.
Julie.
Wait, do we have a motion?
Yeah, I made the motion.
Oh, wait, and then
Vadim. I can make the motion, right? Yeah, because it's not a real motion, it's a nomination.
Okay, I just, sorry. Yeah, yes.
Taylor.
Yes.
Jihan.
Yes.
Vadim.
Yes.
Sylvan.
Yes.
Carol.
Yes.
Shayna.
Yes.
And I am a yes. Congratulations, Adam.
Thank you.
Congratulations to the three of you, and thank you.
We are getting to work right away. Awesome. Thanks, everybody. So we are coming close to the end of our agenda here. We have accomplished a lot today. Thank you, everybody, for being patient. The last thing on our agenda is work group updates. And so I will get started. I know normally when we do work group updates, we read the mission statement. That is tricky because we don't have the full mission statement. I can read the crowd control one if that's helpful. Maybe I did this. The crowd control and use of force work group examines existing use of force policies, training, and tactics of the Portland Police Bureau, reviews best practices, legal standards, and other information, and makes appropriate recommendations. The only update for crowd control is basically what we already discussed, which is the forum that is next week. So please do take a look at the Facebook page, spread the word. We're gonna get an email out by tomorrow, yes, David, on the forum?
Yes, it will come out tomorrow, yes.
And then we will be having our next meeting in 2 weeks. And that is it. Policy and outreach.
So the policy and outreach group met. We had a good showing from both CRC members as well as the public, and a few people from the community wanted to volunteer and be on the work group going forward. So that's good news. We decided that we would meet every third Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. right after the crowd control work group, so that people would be able to transition, and people who are on both work groups will be able to do that in one afternoon rather than over a series of days. We discussed outreach efforts, the people that we would need to contact with in the near future, as well as historically the community organizations that we've reached out to in the past. So that was shared with everybody. And we discussed generally some policy initiatives that we can begin working on analyzing data. And right now, there might be some other more pressing needs, but we kind of discussed generally what policies we can start looking into.
Yes, and also just to piggyback on that, there are two members of the community that are on that work group, and there are seven members of the community on the crowd control use of force work group. I know I've been pushing on my social media for people to join, and so people are getting involved. Make sure that you're including them. I already sent Adam and Vadim, I sent you their contact, but make sure they're in the loop. Recurring audit?
Sorry. Well, recurring audit did not meet because there was no work group to meet.
Yes. Cool. For the record, got it. Okay. I think we have exhausted the agenda, and now we're at public comment, unless there are any other things, new or old business, people want to bring up on the CRC. Okay. Public comment. So the way we will go about this is, folks in the public, you will raise your hand, and then we will move you over to speak. If you cannot raise your hand for some reason, maybe put in the chat. Put it in the chat and I'll get you over here. We have one person so far. So Mr. Handelman, you are able to speak now, I think.
Hi, I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. I just wrote in the chat that if you're also on the phone, you can press *9 to raise your hand. So the chief mentioned how to rebuild trust, and I think one of the ways to do that is to stop killing people and to stop attacking members of the public with weapons. Weapons that are being used at these protests are not tools. They're designed to hurt people. They do hurt people. They hurt innocent bystanders. They hurt the people in the protests. Crowd control munitions have been shot at people's heads and caused serious injuries. I brought this concern about language to the chief at the PCCP meeting last week, and he continued to use the word tools there and three times tonight. I think part of the mindset of the police has to be to stop minimizing it, what it is that they're doing when they take a life, when they use violence against the community. That's going to be the most important thing to build trust. For those of you who didn't see it, Ms. Iona from Legal Women Voters and I co-authored an op-ed piece that we actually wrote a couple of weeks ago, ended up in the Oregonian this morning, talking about things that can be done to strengthen the IPR and CRC system. That's not a comprehensive list by any means. And for those of you who don't know, a couple of years ago, there was a proposal to merge a Citizen Review Committee with the Police Review Board by moving the CRC's meetings behind closed doors like the PRB meetings happen. And we and other members of the community spoke out strongly against that. So things have remained as they are. If anything, the Police Review Board meeting should be brought into the public. And there should be fewer police officers on those boards, probably even better if it's an all community committee, the Police Review Board. As you're looking toward having more appeals, a work group that was set up at the time, at the same right after that conversation was happening, dealt with how to make it easier for CRC to hold many appeals. And the suggestion that we had that got tabled was to allow the members of the Police Review Board to sit as members of CRC, two or three people at a time, because they only hear maybe one or two cases a year, the volunteers on the Police Review Board, whereas you guys are hearing 12 or more a year sometimes. It would relieve your work if they were allowed to, be voting members in appeals, but still the majority of the people listening to the appeals would be Citizen Review Committee members. So I really want you to start thinking about that if you think that you're going to get overwhelmed again. The work groups that were just created, I think, give you a direction of where to go. I'm curious to see what's going to be discussed at the retreat in terms of the work that y'all want to do. I'm very excited to hear that Director Caldwell actually invited CRC to participate in policy reviews. The IPR has been doing them for several years without inviting you to the table. I hope that you take him up on that. I think it'll only be good for the whole community if you all get involved in those. And I'm a little confused, like this recurring audit work group as I don't know, pedestrian, perhaps as the name sounds, was going to be looking at, I think, 5 mediations, 5 investigations, 5 declined cases, and 5 of 2 other kinds of cases, how they might get handled. And then it just kind of stopped. So I'm hoping that that setup of an audit works, gears back up again, because you'll know which area to dive more deeply into if you go through those sample cases and then maybe find a few hints of what needs more of a deep dive. So I do encourage people to join that work group and to look into those files and see how IPR and internal affairs are working, because that's one of the main things that the community is counting on you doing, because we can't see those files. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Handelman. I don't currently see anybody else with their hand raised or in the chat wanting to speak. Is there anyone else that would like to give public comment? Okay. Well then, on that note, I think we are ready to adjourn. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
I move.
I second.
Seconded, all right. Then, see, here's where I get mixed up, because I use Robert's rules at work and we have to motion to adjourn. We do have to motion to adjourn, right, David, with a vote?
No, we don't.
Too late. I already did that. And then, okay. So then, bye.
I take it back.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.